Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports, and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. Hit us up there. Interact with us wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. So send all of your reaction in, voicemails, the free agency. You've got reactions to that, what the Bulls might do with Zach LaVine this summer, what you think about the Summer League coming up. Anything you've got for us, leave it for us at 331-979-1369, or you can hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Matt, what's going on? It was a crazy, crazy, crazy weekend for the free agency as it hit on Sunday night. We recorded an episode yesterday, and we had some audio problems after recording. After recording a 40-minute really good episode, not to your fault at all, but sometimes these audio softwares, when we're recording, decide to crash, and then when they crash, it's not a good thing. So we're back here to do the episode that we did yesterday, talking all free agency. We've got some playoff and conference realignment talk to do at the end of the episode as well. But how you doing? What did you think about free agency as a whole? LeBron James is now a Los Angeles Laker. DeMarcus Cousins joining the Golden State Warriors.
Lots of people are Lakers. Yeah, well, what's going on, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Apologies to those of you who were hankering for an episode yesterday. As Jordan said, we did one, recorded one, and as I was going to save my file, my audio software crashed and could not recover itself, and I did everything I could to get that file back, and it was gone. I think it was my computer telling me to turn it off and go outside. I'm up at my folks' place in northern Michigan right now, enjoying a beautiful 4th of July week where I should not be sitting inside staring at a computer screen watching waveforms go across as I talk into a microphone about sports. But hey, I love doing this show, so I'm going to fight my computer and the fact that it doesn't think I should be doing this right now, and this time we will win, and we will get this episode out there. Yeah, totally crazy. LeBron is a Laker. So are a bunch of other people. That's going to make for a very entertaining, like, they should make a sitcom out of this, or a reality show or whatever. You got LeBron, you got Lance Stephenson, you got JaVale, and now, as of last night, you got Rajon Rondo. A dude who drove LeBron crazy as a member of the Boston Celtics when the Cavs and Celtics kept going at it and at it, and then also Celtics and Heat going at it and at it. So all sorts of very interesting characters that are getting piled up in Lakerland. And then, of course, the other big development that happened yesterday that we can now talk about that we didn't get to in yesterday's episode is the Boogie signing in Golden State. How about that, Jordan? What are your thoughts on Boogie going to the Warriors?
Look, people are yelling and screaming across the league that he decided to take the easy way out. I look at it this way. Okay, DeMarcus Cousins took the MLE, what is that, $5.4 million or something like that?
$5.3.
He's not even going to, like, they're talking about him not even playing until the start of the new year. So that's what, two or three months of DeMarcus Cousins. Like, for me, if it's true that he had zero offers on the table from any other team in the league, that's the NBA's fault. That's the other 29 teams' fault. Like, he called up Bob Myers from Golden State and said, hey, can we make something happen here? And for DeMarcus Cousins to bet on himself for 1 year, maybe grab a ring, and then go out somewhere else and test free agency next year, this is a good move for DeMarcus Cousins. Like, you look at what the Pelicans did, and they went after Julius Randle instead of re-signing DeMarcus Cousins. $5.4 million going to Golden State, I think, is crazy. I think it's kind of an overreaction from players and from fans saying that, oh, now it's just a complete wash again. Like, to me, this is a fault of 29 other NBA teams for not seriously considering DeMarcus Cousins and being able to rehab his Achilles. And so for DeMarcus Cousins, I think this is a good move for him. It's a phenomenal move for Golden State, and it's just going to be that much harder for LeBron and for any team in the West to get past Golden State next year.
I mean, it absolutely, assuming when he does come back, he comes back healthy and he's efficient, I think it makes the Warriors better. I think it gives the Warriors another option as opposed to the Hamptons Five and, you know, the death lineup, whatever you want to call it, with Draymond and Iguodala in there with Steph, Clay, and KD. You mentioned it's the... You said something about, well, you know, if it is true what we're hearing, that no other team gave Boogie an offer, and you're saying, well, that's the fault of the 29 other teams in the league, because a lot of people are saying, oh my gosh, like the best team in the league just got Boogie. Like, how ridiculous is this? Do you put the Bulls into that category of teams at fault for not checking out what it would cost to get Boogie? Because a lot of Bulls fans are saying, if we could get Boogie for 5.3, why the hell didn't we get Boogie for 5.3? Like, what do you think about
for
that?
For Bulls fans, where is he going to play? You just drafted a guy at number 7 that plays his position. Like, to me, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I get it. If he would have came, he wouldn't come to the Bulls on an MLE, and he wouldn't have came for $5.4 million. If he's going to any other team but Golden State, he's probably asking for something damn near a max. And if it's true that nobody wanted to pay him even close to that, or give him what is it, 3, 4, 5 months until he's actually healthy and ready to go to see if he's worth it, I understand it from team's perspective, and from the Bulls' standpoint, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you have 6 front court players. You've got a guy that you just drafted at number 7 that's supposed to be your future center alongside Lauri Markkanen. So to me, it just doesn't make any sense. I look at it this way. Like, if he's going to go and chase a ring, okay. Did it really move the needle? Is it going to really move the needle for anybody to think that Golden State was not going to win it next year, or be the favorites at least to win it next year? No, it only just solidifies the fact that Golden State is looking around the league telling everybody, hey, you know what? You think you guys we're going to rest and sit back and rest on what we already have? No, we're going to keep our foot on your throat and add another piece to this team that's going to make damn sure that nobody else is going to beat them in that Western Conference. It's a solid move, and I get people are angry about Adam Silver sitting back and letting them sign DeMarcus Cousins under value and letting them stack up all these all-stars, and people complain and compare it to the Chris Paul trade and him being denied going to play with Kobe. What do you think about that?
Right, but that was, yeah, I keep seeing that comparison too, but I'm sorry, that was a trade. This is just a free agent signing with a team that wants to sign him. It's you're comparing apples and oranges if you're saying I can't believe Adam Silver let this happen. Well, what is the commissioner going to do about a free agent signing somewhere where he has every right to sign? Now, I don't necessarily think it was a good move, and this was back when Stern was still running things, whenever that was, 2011, I think, near the end of his tenure, when he stepped in and prevented that trade that would have sent CP3 to the Lakers, and instead he ended up going to the Clippers. I didn't like that at the time, the commish intervening in something like that. If that was going to happen, let it happen. So I also don't have an issue with the commish not intervening in this one. If it's going to happen, a free agent's going to sign somewhere, let him sign somewhere. Honestly, if it were going to happen where Adam Silver comes in and says, hold on, time out, no, we're not going to let this happen, it would have been the Durant going to Golden State thing 2 years ago, because Durant certainly moves the needle a hell of a lot more than Boogie Cousins does, as good as Boogie is. And that was Kevin Durant joining a team that, yeah, they choked in the finals and lost, but that was Durant joining a team that just broke the longstanding Bulls record for regular season wins. Went 73-9, and you took arguably the second best player in the league and added it to them in free agency. If the commission is going to step in and intervene and prevent a free agent from going somewhere, it would have been Durant to the Warriors. So, no, I'm not surprised that he quote-unquote let this happen with letting Boogie go there. It's just the rich get rich.
Let's rewind and go back to LeBron going to L.A. now. So we've touched on Boogie Cousins going to the Warriors, so let's talk about LeBron going to L.A. The most surprising thing, I think, coming from this deal is that he signed a four-year deal and he's committed to staying in L.A., and I think this only adds to the final piece of LeBron's real legacy. Him adding to the fact that going to L.A., going to a historically great franchise in the Lakers, I think if following in the footsteps of so many greats who've gone to the Lakers before and won titles, you look at Wilt Chamberlain, you look at Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you look at Shaquille O'Neal going to the Lakers and winning championships, I think that's what LeBron is ultimately looking at. Obviously, he's choosing this as a lifestyle over winning first. That's not to say that he doesn't want to win with the Lakers, because I still wholeheartedly believe that he feels like that young core, and maybe it takes a year to build up that young core and then go after free agents in 2019 if they're not going to trade for Kawhi. I feel like he's all right with that. He feels like, I think they're in a good position where they can add another superstar or maybe two and be competitive this year, and they're really push the gas for next year or years to come to sign in and bring somebody else. I think the biggest surprise of it all was his commitment for 4 years to stay in Los Angeles and build something with the Lakers out in the West Coast.
Yeah, I think everybody was expecting him to sign another one-on-one deal like he had been doing since coming back to the Cavs. And whether that was deciding to stay in Cleveland or going elsewhere, everybody expected he was going to sign a two-year deal with a second-year player option so that he could keep his options open, and whatever LeBron wants to do, LeBron gets to do. It is definitely interesting and kind of surprising to see him make such a long-term commitment to the Lakers, who probably aren't going to the finals next year. Let's be real. It seems like he is excited about the idea of playing with Lonzo Ball, and that was, you know, a big question. If the Lakers are trying to go out there and get another star, it's not PG. He's recommitted to OKC. The Kawhi stuff is still kind of hanging up in the air right now. Would they ship off Lonzo Ball as part of a trade? Would they try to keep Ingram in town? Can they keep Kyle Kuzma, who had a great rookie season unexpectedly? It's kind of where we go from here. Well, does LeBron want to play with a bunch of established stars who he can get to now come to the Lakers now that he's committed to them? Or does he want to play with these young kids? And does he think he can win with these young kids? But as you said, that's not exactly the entirety of why LeBron made this decision. It was basically staying in Cleveland or going to L.A. Both are considered home to him and his family at this point. They've had houses out in L.A. for a long time now, spend their summers there. There's the factor of LeBron Jr. about to start high school basketball, and there are rumors about him going and joining the whatever it's called. I think it's called Sierra Canyon prep basketball team out there, where Scottie Pippen's son currently plays for, Kenyon Martin's son currently plays for, and also just the fact that he felt like he had fulfilled his promise to Cleveland, and it was okay to leave this time. He brought them the title in 2016. He brought them the title that he promised, and let's be real, he and Dan Gilbert hated each other. They put some Band-Aids on their relationship for the sake of the fans of Cleveland for 4 years. But we are hearing stuff, Dan Gilbert saying, I can't wait to get my team back. LeBron has had a stranglehold on my team, my organization, since he came back. And LeBron is probably ready to rid himself of that guy, who he's never been a big fan of. And he's not a fan of Gilbert's politics either. If we can be real for a second, Dan Gilbert is a Trump train guy. And LeBron is definitely on the opposite end of the political spectrum in this country right now. And the political climate is fairly heated. So I don't think he was feeling any amount of guilt this time around. And he was ready to get rid of Dan Gilbert. Dan Gilbert was ready to get rid of him.
Yeah, and I think another thing to add to this, LeBron trying to learn how an organization is run, how it's run from the GM, how it's run from the owners. And I think that's the biggest thing here is, like, what LeBron wants to do after basketball, I think, impacts this too. He's going to be able to pick Magic Johnson's brain, Jeannie Buss's brain, for what, the next 4 years, about how a organization is supposed to be constructed, how it's supposed to be run, and how you get to that next level in sustaining a powerful relationship and becoming an owner. And that's something LeBron has said he's wanted to do after basketball. So I think that plays a factor too, is like learning from one of the best and most historic organizations in the NBA and being able to sit there and pick the brains of the people that are working in the front office for the next 4 years. I think that's huge. I think that's huge as part of what LeBron is trying to do here. I talked about adding to his legacy as well. And the final thing, too, I would add here is the Lakers were a 35-win team last year. And you add LeBron James to that team and say they become a 50-plus win team, I would have to imagine that LeBron's name is back in the MVP conversation. His name is there every year, but he hasn't won an MVP in 5 years, which is absolutely ridiculous. He hasn't won an MVP in 5 years. So I think if LeBron takes this team and, you know, he puts up the averages he did in Cleveland last year, he takes this team to a 50-plus win season, I think we're talking about LeBron being an MVP again next year.
I don't know, man. I mean, maybe. Maybe. But if you talk about LeBron switching teams and greatly increasing the win total and legitimacy of that team, go back to the last time he switched teams, and he came back to Cleveland in 14-15, and he turned a Cavs team that had 30-something wins into a team that had 50-something wins, a 20-win increase from the previous season, and he didn't win the MVP that year. Steph Curry won the MVP that year. Let's remember that 2014-15 Steph Curry was the year that we all went, holy crap, Steph Curry's really good, and was like setting three-point records left and right. So it seems like every year in the NBA, it's not about, are you the best player in the league? And if you're the best player in the league, you get the vote for MVP. Because if that's the case, LeBron would win every year. It's that people don't want to see the same person win MVP every year, every year, every year. It's why MJ lost one to Charles Barkley. MJ lost one to Karl Malone. It happens. This year, it was James Harden. I don't, you know, whatever, fine. He was the best player on the team that had the number one overall seed. Okay. But it's not necessarily a lock that LeBron's going to be the MVP, just because, like, the last time LeBron moved, it was Steph's MVP year because Steph was the hot, trendy topic, and that he was the player that was, maybe not everybody's agreeing that he's the best all-around player in the league right now, but he was the most exciting player to watch. He was the player that was actively changing how the game was played. It's that kind of stuff that goes into people's MVP votes that says, no guarantee LeBron wins next year. Even if he goes to the Lakers and turns them into a 50-win team. Now, maybe because it's something totally new and he's going to a more difficult Western Conference, and that is maybe more impressive than taking a Cavs team that's a 30-win team and turning him into a 50-win team. Maybe that pushes him over the top, assuming he keeps his level of productivity where it is in his 15th season going into his 16th.
Yeah, I think that adds a huge factor to it, too. You look at him going to the Western Conference and all the good teams that are out there in the West, and like you talked about it, his return to Cleveland, he also had Kyrie Irving, too. Him going to the Lakers, sure, he's got Brandon Ingram, sure, he's got Lonzo Ball, sure, he's got Kyle Kuzma. Those guys aren't Kyrie Irving,
true,
though.
Very so good to, point, yeah.
So to me, if he takes this to a 50-plus win Lakers team in the West and continues the productivity that he had in Cleveland last season, like, to me, that there's no doubt in my mind that he becomes MVP next year. And that's, and we'll find out. We'll find out pretty damn quickly if this team that they're putting together for 1 year is even going to be competitive. I mean, we talked about KCP coming on for 1 year, Lance Stephenson coming on for 1 year, and JaVale McGee coming on for 1 year, and Rondo coming on for 1 year. We'll see. We'll see what happens. The final thing I want to touch on with the Lakers and LeBron overall. Matt, if you're in the front office of the Lakers, or if you're in LeBron's shoes, do you commit to this young core for 1 year, or do you try to trade and bring in Kawhi right now? If you're the Lakers right now, what are you sitting there thinking of?
I think you wait. I think you absolutely wait. Every reason tells you wait it out. LeBron is committed to a 4-year deal, and it doesn't seem like he needs to be in win a title now mode for the 2018-19 season. If you're the Lakers, that's good news, and it means you can wait. You can wait out Kawhi. You also kind of want to wait out Kawhi to see what he looks like this season and see if he is a guy worth signing to a huge deal and or giving up a lot of pieces to get. If they give up most of their young farm system right now for Kawhi, and it turns out Kawhi's injury problem is a real problem, and it's something that's going to plague him for the remainder of his career, you just gave up most of your young talent that you had spent time accumulating for a guy who is injured and busted for the most part for the remainder of his career. That's another reason to wait. And also, I mean, what's the problem with waiting it out a year when, let's be real, we were just talking about the Warriors. Is LeBron going to beat the Warriors with this Lakers squad, even if they go get Kawhi this year? Probably not. We don't even know what kind of health Kawhi has right now and how much of the 2018-19 season he's going to play. You're not beating the Warriors. So what's the point of sacrificing a bunch of guys if he's just going to come and sign in 2019 anyway? And in 2019, the Lakers can collectively make a decision of, based on what we saw from Kawhi in 18-19 and what we saw from our young guys in 18-19, do we want to sign him to a max deal, or do we want to build this thing around LeBron and around the young guys? All of the signs point to the Lakers having every reason and every right to wait until 2019 to get Kawhi if he still wants to go to Lakers a year from now, which I'm assuming he does.
It solidifies our argument, I think, even heavier than we had yesterday now that DeMarcus Cousins is with the Golden State Warriors. Look, the Warriors have a lot of moves to make next summer. Klay Thompson's going to be a free agent. I believe Draymond Green's going to be a free agent next year. You've got DeMarcus Cousins only in a one-year deal. So
I think Draymond's 2020.
Draymond's 2020, so 2 years now from Draymond. Kevin Durant's on a 1-1 next year. You're not 100% certain that he's going back there. So the Golden State Warriors have a lot of question marks coming into next summer. So if we're looking at another championship-winning team in the Warriors this year, I think it all only strengthens the argument that wait on Kawhi. And you bring up a huge point that we haven't seen him on the floor in almost a year now. So what happens if you trade for him and he's doo-doo? I look at that and say, well, you just gave up a lot of young assets that you could maybe build something around and spend your money in 2019 going after another free agent. And you did it for what? So to me, I think you wait. You wait on Kawhi Leonard and you let LeBron get accustomed to what he's going to do in LA, and you let him get familiar and build some chemistry with some of these young core pieces that if you bring another star or maybe two stars in next summer, you could be looking at a possible contender in the West. So I think the move is definitely to wait now and not trade away any young assets and just kind of let things feel out, because you got a lot of guys on one-year deals, too. You'll have a lot of money to spend next summer. So we'll see. It'll be definitely interesting.
The main focus for the Lakers in 2018-19 is putting this reality show together. Like that's
easily.
It's not about winning a ring this year, this upcoming NBA season. It's about putting out a great, entertaining reality show with all these crazy characters they got in Lakerland now.
We
got
to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're going to run through the rest of free agency, how it might impact the Bulls, some former Bulls getting some big money that we'll talk about, and also Aaron Gordon re-signing with Orlando and how that impacts maybe Zach LaVine's restricted free agency. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, going through the rest of free agency so far, at least what we know so far, with players signing, players re-signing at the same places. So Matt, let's just run through some of these contracts quickly and some guys that maybe switched teams or decided to stay where they were at. I think one of the main ones and one of the first ones off the board was Nikola Jokic with Denver, 5 years, $148 million. Max contract with them. I think that's a good deal. That's a steal for a young center that's going to be a core of that Denver team. We look at DeAndre Jordan going from the Clippers, opting out of his player option at $24.1 million.
Cuban finally got his guy. I mean, hold on. It's not official yet. Ink to paper hasn't happened. You never know. He could get kidnapped.
Oh, that's very true. So reportedly, the deal is 1 year, $24.1 million. Same money he was going to get from the Clippers. I think this is a good move for both sides. Dallas looks like they're going to get their center for 1 year, see if this works in a veteran, if they can kind of mesh the two guys that they've got in Doncic and Dennis Smith Jr. You still got Harrison Barnes on that team as well. So they might be an interesting place. And for only 1 year at that max money, Dallas had money to spend. They've always been looking for a center, and they've been chasing DeAndre Jordan for, what, 2-3 years now?
Yeah.
So I think that was a decent move.
Sounds like the Mavs, and you know, it's a pretty classic Cuban move. It sounds like they're ready to try to be contenders coming into next season. That's, I mean, why would you spend $25 million on DeAndre Jordan if you don't want to be winning basketball games? So as bad as Dallas was this past season, and as much as maybe it would be in their best interest to rebuild another year and get themselves another pick, I mean, I think they won the 2018 draft by being able to steal Luka Doncic away from teams in the top three. So that you get that. You, as you mentioned, they have Dennis Smith Jr., another promising kid from that 2017 draft class, and now they're going to try to win some games. I mean, I don't know how much DeAndre Jordan changes things. I've always thought he's kind of overrated, kind of one-dimensional. But hey, I mean, Cuban wanted him 3 years ago, and he finally got him. Kind of makes me think of Gar Foreman, John Paxson, and Dwayne Wade. Finally got their guy.
Good luck winning in the West to Dallas, though. That's all I'm going to say.
Absolutely not.
Running through a few more names here. Doug McDermott goes to Indiana at 3 years, $22 million, fully guaranteed.
McBuckets got paid.
The Pacers are out here trying this experiment that four other teams have tried, including the Chicago Bulls, and it hasn't worked. So, to me, I don't know about this. I think it's just going to be a waste of money for the Pacers, and I'm honestly surprised that they gave him this long of a term and that much money. For the production level that he served over the last 2 years, it just blows my mind that some of these guys that are younger and might not have lived up to their potential as far as draft picks go are getting more money than maybe some productive veterans that you know what you're going to get out of those guys. It's crazy to me the way that the landscape of free agency has kind of changed as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I were both pretty shocked to see Doug get $22 million guaranteed, because we all know that he didn't work out here in Chicago. He was basically the most frustrating draft bust of this front office in recent history, and a reason that Bulls fans, those of you in Fireguard Packs Nation, are constantly citing the Doug McDermott trade as one of the worst moves that this front office has made. And yeah, it was a bad one. They traded up to get Doug. Gave up two first-round picks for one. And he was never a big difference maker here, and now he's about to be playing on his fifth team in five NBA seasons. So, shocking, really, when you think about how tight and how strapped for cash this NBA free agent market is. Guys are grabbing what they could get, and I'm surprised that Doug could get $22 million. I don't think, speaking of DeAndre and the Mavs and moving the needle and how much do you move the needle, I don't think Doug moves the needle a whole hell of a lot for the Pacers.
I think the only thing that I could say maybe positively is the Pacers have a pretty decent track record of turning around guys that are lottery picks. And so Doug McDermott being in the back half of the lottery, I look at guys like Miles Turner and a guy that they acquired in Victor Oladipo, who bounced around from a couple different teams early on. I look at that. I look at even Domantas Sabonis, who the OKC drafted. Like, I look at all those players who were really productive last year and turning into a nice young core. Maybe the Pacers figure that they can find out what's wrong with Doug McDermott, or they can maximize the production level from Doug McDermott maybe off the bench. I looked at his numbers, and the one thing that stood out to me is he shot 49.3% from three last year. Granted, he only took about three per game and only played about 16 minutes per. Still, 49.3% from three is pretty solid. Although Doug McDermott's not that athletic and he's a horrible defender, if you can find some production value off the bench where you need a guy that can spot up and shoot a three or come off pick and rolls, come off pick and pops and be able to deliver you a three or a couple threes in a stretch, maybe they can figure something out too. And I think to add to that, you're paying a guy under 26 years old less than $8 million per season. If you look at that just as a value in the NBA, I think the potential, what the Pacers can figure out doing there, it doesn't completely crunch your cap. And at the same time, if he turns out to be something that more than maybe the four other teams that found him before this, then you're getting really good value at under $8 million for the next two seasons. So I think this could play in the Pacers' favor. I just think it's a lot of money. And right now, the immediate reaction is a complete overpay.
Yeah. I think it's absolutely an overpay. It looks like an overpay right now, and one of the more egregious ones we've seen up to this point. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, right? I think he's probably the other pretty big overpay right now. I also don't understand why Phoenix gave Ariza $15 million for one season when they're probably not going to be anywhere close to competitive next season. There's, for a market that was supposed to be strapped for cash, there have been a few oddball contracts where you say, really? That team gave that guy that money? Then to me, it's those three, KCP, Ariza and McDermott are the head scratchers for me.
I think another one too, and it's not a huge overpay, but it's a lot of money for a guy that hasn't played worth a damn in the NBA the first four seasons, and that's Glenn Robinson III. He was a guy that I thought the Bulls might take a flyer on if he was cheap at what, like $2 million, $3 million?
Yeah.
He went for 2 years, $8.3 million to Detroit. Like I said, he's only played in 49 games in his first 3 years in the NBA, so to me, that's not good.
No.
That's a classic Detroit Pistons move.
Yeah, it is. It is. I didn't like that one, that signing either. I don't think it makes a lot of sense. And I think it's an overpay. Jordan, I just realized that before we get out of here for today's episode, we got to talk about Aaron Gordon and his contract and what it means for Zach LaVine. I don't want to, but we have to.
4 years, $84 million.
Ew.
Aaron Gordon goes back to Orlando.
Ew, ew, ew.
That might be the worst news for Bulls fans as far as free agency goes, because I was arguing it yesterday and with a couple of people that said, we're not going to overpay LaVine. What do you think LaVine's market value is? To me, I think it's still kind of unknown. So we look at Aaron Gordon at the top of the rank there, 4 years, $84 million. He's 23 years old. I look at Julius Randle, though, that just signed yesterday with the Pelicans for 2 years at $18 million. $9 million? Julius Randle's really only $9 million a year? So there's two ends of the spectrum on two really young guys. Granted, they don't either one of them play Zach LaVine's position. I get that. But overall production for a young player, I think we're going to be looking at somewhere in the middle. Like we had guessed, I think, on the show before. I think if the Bulls want to retain Zach LaVine, I think it's going to cost them more than – it's going to cost them probably about $17 to $19 million now per year. Like, looking at Aaron Gordon's stats, man, comparing and contrasting them over the first 3 years of their seasons in this
league. Pretty similar, right?
They're awfully damn
close.
Pretty
similar.
They're awfully damn close.
Look, I think the silver lining for Bulls fans who are worrying about the Bulls overpaying LaVine this summer, and we haven't heard anything yet about their negotiations and how far they've gotten, if at all. I think the Bulls are just kind of taking their time with this. Maybe Zach LaVine is out there looking at other offers, and that is the silver lining. I am curious what other kind of offers Aaron Gordon may have explored or gotten outside of Orlando. Did Orlando just lock him up to that four-year deal, paying him, you know, more than 20 mil per, because they didn't want to let him stray too far from the nest and see what other people were willing to offer? To me, that doesn't make a lot of sense, because we keep talking about how not a whole lot of teams have max-level cap space to sign that tier of free agents. You know, after LeBron, after LeBron and Paul George, it was the restricted guys, LaVine, Jabari, and Aaron Gordon. They were sort of like the second tier of free agents this summer. And for a lot of people are saying, oh gosh, well, like if Gordon got that money, that means LaVine's going to get that money. Well, the Bulls still hold the chips. The Bulls can still say, LaVine, if you think you're worth a max deal where you want us to pay you somewhere upwards of 20 mil per over a four-year contract, go out and prove to us that you can get some other team to sign you to that. And if not, then we'll negotiate something that everybody can agree is a fair price, somewhere hopefully in the teens of millions and not above 20 million. I still think the Bulls have that leverage. I wonder why Orlando signed that deal, because seemingly they would have the same leverage over Aaron Gordon because of this current market. So that's the one hope that Bulls fans should have and should be reminding themselves of right now. The fact that we haven't seen some deal happen already between the Bulls and LaVine, it's probably a good thing, because it means maybe the Bulls are letting LaVine see what other options are out there. And when LaVine finds out what other options are out there, or better yet, lack thereof, he comes back and is willing to take a more team-friendly deal. That's what I'm hoping is going on right now. And that's why I was surprised to see that Gordon deal happen so quickly.
Look, I think somebody that might be a player in this, and we've talked about it before, but I think it's even more so now. I looked at the Kings, and there was talk about them maybe being interested in Jabari Parker. They're out on him now, so there's one or two things. Either they really like somebody else in free agency a la Zach LaVine, or they weren't willing to spend the money that Jabari Parker's asking for at maybe 12 to 14 million. Maybe they look at Zach LaVine and say, hey, we'll throw an offer sheet at him rather than Parker. And to me, like Zach LaVine laughing at Nick Friedel's tweet the other day, saying that the Bulls would prefer him to be somewhere between $14 and $16 million per year, and saying that the Bulls shouldn't overpay for him. Like,
didn't like that. To me, that means that LaVine definitely thinks he's worth in the $20 million range.
Another thing too, and this is just small, I did see Zach LaVine liked multiple players in the Sacramento Kings summer league workouts, one including Marvin Bagley's picture the other day. So there's definitely some interest, I think, from the Sacramento Kings and their young core, and Zach LaVine taking a hard look at that. But like we had said before, the Kings only have $17 million to spend, and I think the one trigger for me here is that LaVine might have serious interest from them, because if the Kings weren't interested at all, they probably would have already signed somebody by now. They would have taken a flyer on a veteran or locked up a guy like, I don't know, locked up Vince Carter for a minimum. But they have done nothing, and they've kept their cap space wide open still.
I don't know. I have heard most recently that the Kings are not as interested in LaVine as was once reported. I'm hearing that the Kings are backing off of LaVine.
So maybe, I don't know then, if the Kings are backing off of LaVine.
That's a good sign for the Bulls, if the Kings are backing off of LaVine.
Very good sign for the Bulls. So now you just got to tilt your head and look at the Atlanta Hawks and say, all right, don't go wild here and try to lock him up on a four-year deal close to $80
million. You can't be too sure with Atlanta. They were okay with taking Trae Young instead of Luka Doncic, so I don't know what the hell that front office is doing right now.
So I think if we take a look at this, it's still pretty unknown. And I think if we're trying to pinpoint a market for LaVine, you use Julius Randle as the low end at $9 million per year, and you use Aaron Gordon as the high end at $21 million per year. I think you find somewhere where we were talking about. If you want to commit to Zach LaVine long term, I think it's going to cost you $17 to $19 million per year when we're all said and done.
I think it's probably going to be somewhere in that range. The Bulls are going to try to talk him down into somewhere, like you said, around $14 to $16 million, and I'd be okay with that. I would even be okay with the top end of that, $16 mil per over 4 years. It's not great, but it would still be a team-friendly deal from the Bulls' perspective, given what some people see in the upside of Zach LaVine. Could turn out to be a steal of a contract if the Bulls do, in fact, sign him to a four-year deal, paying him an average of $16 or $17 mil over those 4 years. But if they sign him to a four-year deal, paying him upwards of $20 mil per, I'm going to be real unhappy about that, especially because, as I said, it seems like they have the cards here. They're holding the winning cards at the negotiating table, because I don't think LaVine's getting that offer from anybody else.
We'll find out if Gar Forman can work his magic this offseason and see if they can lock up LaVine for a more team-friendly deal than anything else. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Hit us up with your texts and voicemails at 331-979-1369. You got any reaction to free agency, maybe what the Bulls should do, what they shouldn't do, what you feel like on the Zach LaVine situation, anything you want to talk about, hear our reaction, 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. We will have an episode for you guys tomorrow, so everybody celebrating 4th of July, have a happy and safe 4th of July. If you can do that and you've got time to listen to us on Locked On Bulls, we're going to do a full mailbag episode tomorrow for you guys. So stay with us here if you want to listen to it early. We'll be dropping that tomorrow morning. So have a happy and safe 4th of July. We'll see you guys on Thursday, July 5th. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful holiday. Be back on Thursday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com